Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Miller Center. For those of you who were with us for dinner last night, and I would say that's most of you, we want to welcome you to the Miller Center and to this forum room, which was designed to mimic the House of Burgesses room in Colonial Williamsburg that once served as the capital of the Commonwealth. And we're delighted to have with us this morning, as he was with us last night, Governor Kaine, who was the first governor since Thomas Jefferson to be inaugurated at the colonial capital, Williamsburg, because of construction, reconstruction, and rehabilitation of our state capital in Richmond was underway. So we're delighted to have him back with us and all of you, and to be here with Rick Lagan, who is known far and wide as the very effective CEO of the Association of Governing Boards of Universities and Colleges, an organization of 1,800 institutions of higher education of all types, two-year and four-year colleges, as well as coordinating boards and foundation boards affiliated with public institutions. AGB is also a continuing education resource for 35,000 trustees, college presidents, and senior administrators. And it's been my pleasure to work with Rick and AGB over the last 10 years or so in sponsoring several commissions and reports. And we're delighted at the Miller Center to be working with Rick and AGB for this meeting today. Let me turn to a couple of things that I think we probably want to focus on. Today we shall examine how higher education is defined and governed, and the leadership roles of elected state officials, university and state higher education executives, and board members in forging a public agenda for higher education. And then we shall focus our attention on the role and responsibility of higher education to help the nation address economic, social, and political needs. This will require us, in the end, to examine the leadership roles of higher education's governing and coordinating boards. At the end of the day, we hope to conclude our deliberations with some recommendations that will help find a more purposeful and compelling agenda. Allow me to lay the foundations for our deliberations today. The pursuit of public education at all levels is a particularly American idea, especially the conviction that educational opportunity must be universally available and that educational excellence must be consistently sought. There is a reason for this. We profoundly believe in the democratic ideal, the Jeffersonian notion that Governor Kaine mentioned last night, that men and women, by the sheer force of education, can so enlighten themselves that representative government will transcend its limitations. In other words, we believe in the idea of progress. We believe that by the power of our own minds, we will make society advance indefinitely into the future. For us, progress means an endless stream of human creativity and imagination, combined with a sustained desire for improvement. So on the one hand, our hopes and aspirations are idealistic. Yet on the other hand, we have found a pragmatic means for achieving our most noble and collective ambitions. It is higher education. We make a simple and direct assumption. Education is good and necessary. It is a prerequisite, the preface to our finest achievements. It is upon that assumption that this nation has invested heavily and sought to build a system of public education that aspires to more than mere adequacy. Our system, therefore, should seek excellence. Many of the universities represented here today are shining examples of that aspiration. Still, despite our unhesitating support for higher education, we're not unaware of the tensions created by circumstances and pressures that accompany change. Such a breathtaking stride of change, even in our lifetime, a pace that we've nearly become accustomed to, inevitably poses challenges. We are tested to keep up. We are challenged to get ahead. In our rush to meet and mold the future, however, our society may take for granted the very institutions upon which our hopes are anchored. Because our educational institutions have provided for this country in the past, there is a tendency, call it wishful thinking or complacency, to assume that they will continue to do so in the future. Nothing could be more dangerous or inviting of failure. There is a saying that in the long run, the race belongs not merely to the swift, but to the far-seeing, to those who anticipate change. That is why we're here today. That is the challenge that we must address. Permit me to put these challenges into some perspective. And I ask you to listen very carefully to these observations for the next 5 or 6 minutes before Rick Ligon comes up. Higher education is America's number one asset. This is an uncertain world. International trade, rapid communications, and advancing technologies are changing all the rules. Our nation's population is growing older and more diverse, and more of us depend on proportionately fewer workers. The greater the uncertainty about the world and what America may become, the more certain we are of higher education's role in our future prosperity. In these times, the national citizenry, whose citizens have the highest levels of education, will fare best. No one knows where the dramatic changes are leading. But when the greatest uncertainty was national security and a time of nuclear threats, America built a preeminent military force. In the midst of today's economic, social, and political uncertainties, America's best protection is a well-educated citizenry. We know of the problems of our colleges and universities, but we also know of their strengths. No higher education system in the world does a better job than America's colleges and universities. If America's colleges and universities are world-class and are among our most prized assets, what is the problem? There are two. First, state and national leaders do not sufficiently recognize the value of higher education in an uncertain world. Their budget decisions are proof that higher education's priority is slipping. Second, colleges and universities do not sufficiently recognize the need to make changes that will keep higher education the number one asset of this nation of free men and women. In a changing nation and world, higher education is changing too slowly. So, what must we want to accomplish today? First, we want to restate the case for higher education. We want to make clear the connection between investment and return, between higher education and a responsible citizenry, between higher education and the future. These connections must be clearly described and understood, for they are important to everyone, those who attend college and those who do not. We want to persuade citizens, their elected representatives, educators, and indeed all who have a stake in our country's well-being, that higher education is essential and that it is at risk. Second, we want to stress the value of higher education in a time of change. Time and distance no longer insulate or isolate Americans from global neighbors. In today's world, the sun never sets on the international stock market. Business travelers can strike agreements in San Francisco one day and Singapore the next. Billions of dollars can be transferred from Zurich to Tokyo in the fraction of a second. So we live in a new America. Once powerful mega corporations are now downsizing and restructuring in the search for flexibility and responsiveness they need to compete with rising economic powers elsewhere in the world. Americans are worried about the future. They are left confused and uneasy by the upheavals and the aftershocks of an economy going through a fundamental transformation. Blue-chip companies falter. Almost daily, newspaper headlines announce daily job cutbacks in large corporations. Other jobs may be created in new and smaller businesses. but the public senses less job security. All the while, advancing technology relentlessly quickens our pace. America's structural metamorphosis is not limited to the economy. The information revolution is shaking our society and its basic values to its very core. Many Americans are old enough to remember a time when the media served as a powerful tool to communicate shared values and expectations, from Franklin Roosevelt's fireside chats to John Kennedy's dramatic description of America's destiny in a global new frontier. Today, instead of three television networks, cable television offers hundreds of channels. All of this information and all of these choices mean that it can be even more difficult to have shared national experiences and to get important messages out to all of us. As information multiplies at a baffling geometric rate, higher education can help us separate knowledge from information. Higher education can help us understand what is important. Higher education's role as a transmitter of civilization's values must not be underestimated. If not colleges and universities, who will acquaint us, each generation, with the next, with the best that has been known and said in the world, and thus with the history of the human spirit? Higher education is part of the glue that binds together the fabric of our society. If we allow higher education to weaken, we weaken that bond. Third, we want to underscore higher education's need to change. We read and hear of the value that the public assigns to higher education. At the same time, we read and hear a frustration that in today's world, higher education is changing too slowly to respond to those it serves. American colleges and universities do make important changes. In the last three decades, American higher education dealt with unprecedented growth in enrollments, established first-class research programs, and created a vast network of community colleges, a distinctly American innovation. But we are concerned that the present pace and scope of change in higher education are not what the new circumstances demand. Our colleges and universities can improve in a number of ways. They have to improve in order to keep our states and our nation economically competitive. Economic growth will occur in those societies that are in the forefront of knowledge discovery and skills development. Our colleges and universities must change in order to teach more complex subjects to ever-increasing numbers of students. Each year, more students come to campus after being out of high school for years. More come from diverse backgrounds. More are employed. More have families. More attend colleges part-time. They are seeking their place in a world that has an unlimited appetite for skills and knowledge. And although we have the world's best system of higher education, this does not mean that all who enter or who graduate have been well served. So we recognize what is right about higher education in this country, its accessibility, its commitment to the democratic ideal of an informed citizenry, the crucial research contributions to agriculture, healthcare, commerce and industry, and other parts of our society. We do not seek your attention or your action because of American higher education is second rate. It isn't. The superior quality of our public and independent colleges and universities is recognized by the American public and by the millions of students who have come from around the world to attend them. Our higher education institutions, therefore, are fundamentally strong and capable of constructive change. But we are worried that these institutions are not getting the support nor making the changes they need. Ladies and gentlemen, those observations and recommendations were written by me in a letter in a report for a commission that I chaired 15 years ago for the Southern Regional Education Board's Commission on Educational Quality. The words have a haunting reality to the challenges of today. They still resonate, and they remind us that we have yet a long road to travel. Some things never change, it seems, and that includes the still youthful appearances of two of my good friends and colleagues who served with me on that commission and who are here today as participants in this meeting, Gordon Davies and Mark Musick. My friend and co-chairman of this conference, Rick Ligon, had not been born at the time. But here is the thread of the thought that must bind us all, regardless of our age, youthful appearance, or educational institutions that we represent. The value of education must be our surest conviction. The improvement of education must be our personal commitment. But it is not ours alone to accomplish. Understand this. Our colleges and universities are ourselves. We are defined by what we teach. We are shaped by what we learn. Therefore, just as no individual is an island, so too no educational institution exists in its own orbit, free and unattached from the country and its citizens that they support. What happens here matters. It matters greatly to us all. And the message that we must convey is that our colleges and universities stand for many things. They exist to distinguish between what is important and what is not. Colleges and universities open up worlds for us to forge friendships that will last a lifetime and to impart the knowledge that preserves our traditions and prepares us for the future. Colleges and universities are not ministerial to society, but neither are they divorced from society's aspirations and needs. So in our report, let no one doubt where we stand. We must make the case compellingly and concisely that higher education is essential to the future of this country. That is our challenge for the day, and Rick Ligon will now add to that measure. Rick.
Good morning. Thank you, Governor. In my short 15 years of life, time has moved rather quickly. Good morning, and let me add my own words of welcome to each of you for taking the time to join us for a meeting, and I think the Governor has put our purpose into a very helpful context in terms of setting our task that we face today. Each of you was carefully invited to represent the cross current of American higher education from across the country. And our job today is real, and our conversations are important. So we do appreciate all of you taking the time to be with us. As I said, I joined Governor Belisle in welcoming you to this very special place, as we saw on the opening video, the Miller Center, for what will be an important conversation on an issue that, as the Governor said, is central to the future of the country. And that is a candid look at American higher education and its challenges and its role in sustaining not only our economy and the development and long-term competitiveness of the nation, but for our own democracy as well. I also want to extend our appreciation at AGB, Governor, to you and the staff of the Miller Center for putting together the details of this meeting and the logistics. These are not easy meetings to convene. We're going to go right at the question of whether and how higher education's leadership and public policy leaders as well can ensure our colleges and universities are carrying out the broader public purpose of our states and collectively our nation. I want to express appreciation again of AGB to Jerry Belisle for his very personal and consistent commitment to higher education, both during his time as a public servant and as an advocate, and as well as his leadership of two very special AGB special projects over the last 10-12 years, the most recent being the Leadership Imperative, which was the result of a task force that the governor left led and whose report was released in September of 2006. And we think that that report in and of itself is a bit of a prequel to the kinds of issues that we hope to focus on today, as well were some other national reports concerning the challenges confronting higher education and its governance. So thank you for your leadership, Governor. I want to thank our Governor, Tim Kaine, for his really right-on remarks last night over dinner. I think you can see that the Commonwealth's Governor is a true friend of education at all levels, and especially higher education in the Commonwealth. Thank you for your comments last night and your commitment to higher education, both in the Commonwealth and across the country. And thanks for sharing a part of your day with us today. And I want to recognize Paul Lingenfelter from SHEO, who will be on a panel later on, for his commitment to this program, which has been, I think, central in part to its success and our attendance. Thanks, Paul, for your leadership in developing the joint SHEO AGB paper and for your encouragement in inviting a number of your colleagues to join us at this meeting. And I want to thank Gordon Davies, Gordon over here sitting, getting ready for his session, for signing on to be kind of our master of ceremonies from this moment through the end of the day, and also for authoring one of the three white papers, along with Jim Duderstadt, whose paper will be the first up for conversation in the session that follows. Jim shared, I think hopefully you've all read the paper, some of his usual thoughtful and provocative insights about higher education, and we look forward to hearing from you a little bit later, Jim. I'd be remiss if I didn't also acknowledge a couple of funding sources that helped us with this meeting, the Carnegie Corporation in part, and also the Ford Foundation, which helped in funding the work that Paul and Rich did in shaping the AGB paper. These, as the governor said, are clearly challenging times for our system of higher education in the country. We're being called upon as a sector to be more accountable, to contain our costs in order to be more affordable. And we're also being urged to aggressively increase the nation's education attainment levels in order to enable us to compete more effectively in a global and knowledge-driven economy. Some would argue that our open system of education and our success at the persistence to degree metric continue to demonstrate America's overall success in higher education graduation rates, and in fact it does. However, it's also clear that we need to do more to make higher education available to an increasingly diverse population and to help ensure that those who we admit to our institutions can be successful in their higher education experience and then move on to help contribute to the overall economy. And also to commit ourselves to achieving higher education's public purpose within our respective states and collectively across the country. Higher education has been the target, both fairly and unfairly, by policymakers for letting our standards slip, being unwilling to aggressively measure how we're doing, and not doing as well as we should in the area of access. All of this is taking place while we've seen state finances become more uncertain and worse, and state allocation commitments to especially public higher education across the country failing to keep up with need. And some of the most financially successful public and private institutions have been called upon by public policymakers, especially in the U.S. Senate, to expend more of the dollars that they target to secure the long-term viability of their institutions, specifically the spending rate of their institution endowments, as a mean to control costs or ensuring student affordability. While many of these issues are fair observations and need our attention, and others are in fact being openly and aggressively addressed by the sector, the net result of this public call to accountability, along with some well-documented governance failures with which we're all familiar, in serving the public interest, has put our traditionally strong public support at some increasing risk as it relates to how well the public sees us doing our work in serving their interests and how we meet our charge to address state and national priorities. This meeting's focus is to look at some of these challenges and to offer some very specific recommendations to policymakers, governors, legislators, along with institution leaders, including chief executives of systems, campuses, and governing bodies, and to state coordinating bodies as well. Our focus is to strengthen our public institutions and their governance in order to expand opportunity and success and to foster a renewed level of public trust. At AGB, we've been encouraging volunteer boards, working in parallel with institution leaders and increasingly with public policymakers, to be more directly engaged with all these current challenges that confront our sector. Our call for boards to become more directly engaged in issues such as cost and education quality have been welcomed by some and resisted by others. But as society's representatives to our public institutions and our private institutions, boards and trustees must broaden their volunteer service to become more engaged, not as de facto administrators, but as independent fiduciaries who recognize that the job of a board member has changed and will likely increasingly change and perhaps become more challenging and difficult. Reclaiming the public's trust and support and focusing on higher education's public purpose are central priorities if this country is to retain or perhaps reclaim its global leadership. That might sound like a bit of an exaggeration, but it's a valid assessment, I believe, of where we are and what we need to be thinking about moving to the future. How we achieve those objectives will frame our discussions today, and hopefully will provide some practical guidance to all of us once we leave this place. Our program includes presentations, all meetings do that, but it's designed mostly with your input in mind. And our outcomes will be based on your thoughts and guidance. This afternoon's breakout sessions will be asked to address some very specific questions and to offer very specific recommendations. You'll be given the specific questions for each of your breakout groups a bit later, but among the issues we're going to seek input on will be questions focused specifically on boards and governance, along with several other issues. Specifically, do our current governance structures facilitate success in achieving a public agenda? And if not, how might they need to be changed or strengthened going forward? Our goal is to take our conversations and to shape them into some specific recommendations that we'll be bringing back to you for hopefully consensus decisions a bit later towards the end of the afternoon. It's a bit of a lofty goal. However, one thing you learn when you work on a program with Jerry Beliles is that a meeting or a process without specific goals that can be implemented is the equivalent of not having a meeting at all. I'm pleased to have AGB partnering with the Miller Center and Miller Center colleagues to move this conversation forward. Again, I extend our appreciation at AGB for all of you and your willingness to participate with us here in Charlottesville today. I really think we can make an important contribution. We need to. I think we can make a real difference. And again, thank you all for joining us. And I think with that, I'm supposed to turn the program over to Gordon. Thank you very much.